Today is Sunday, June 6th, 2021. This is part 15 of Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for asking, and glad to hear you're well. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, of course.
Thanks so much. So our last interview was interrupted by a fire alarm, but it was a good place for an interruption because you had just finished up telling us about an October hike that you did back in 1998, exploring some of the Powell Plateau area. Can you pick the thread up from then?
Oh, for sure. For sure, Tom. 1998 passed with after that trip to Powell. And I don't know what the reasoning was, but I didn't have any long trips in 99. And, these are work demands or family demands, whatever. Oh, my wife just told me I got married that year.
That's right. Well, that's a good reason.
Which was in March. That's right.
Nice.
So, okay. So, but we did, Renee and I, my new wife, my wife, at the time, did do a trip to the Grand Canyon in December of 99. So it was her first trip to the canyon, really.
Really?
And, wow. She grew up in Las Vegas, and she had visited the Western Grand Canyon when she was a kid.
Okay.
But, just like going to Hoover Dam and things like that.
Hmm.
And then she moved to the Pacific Northwest, so she never really got down to this part of the world. And in December, we decided to do just an overnight trip to the South Rim, and I introduced her some day hiking. You know, the first day we went down the Kaibab Trail and walked around O'Neill Butte. That was exciting for her because it's pretty loose. Some of that scree is quite loose around O'Neill.
Yeah, and, Jim, how did you guys meet?
Well, I work at the Geological Survey of Canada in Vancouver.
Right.
And Renee and her husband at the time came to the Geological Survey of Canada to be volunteers.
Oh, wow.
And to help in research. And so I used them as research tools, basically. You know, they would sit in the library and do investigations of literature that I had identified that was relevant. And then we ultimately wrote it up in a series of scientific papers, which were used by the province of British Columbia to help establish protection for specific fossil localities.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was a nice contribution that we were able to make.
Hmm.
And after a number of years, Renee and I were both on the board of the Vancouver Paleontological Society, which is it's just an amateur group that gets together periodically and talks about fossils. It has guest speakers and whatnot. So
cool.
I was helping out with the board, and she was helping out with the board. And at one point, I could see this was towards the end of their tenure as volunteers.
Hmm.
I could see that she seemed a little distraught and. And eventually she told me that she was having problems with her husband and they wouldn't be able to volunteer anymore. And I said, well, that's no problem, and I understand completely. And then in a few months I asked her out. So it was pretty whirlwind type relationship, I guess. And that was in 97 or 98, right? So it wasn't like it was a month later that we got married.
Yeah.
It was 15 18 months, something like that, right?
Okay.
So,
nice.
Yeah, that's how it kind of came together. And Renee was born in Las Vegas, and she, just like I was born in New York, and she was born in Las Vegas. You really can't get more American than that.
Yeah.
And we both met each other in Canada, and we both came off of bad relations that we had established here. So what it means is that Americans probably should look for their own kind. Anyways,
in
I don't want to get too. Yeah, that's right. I don't want to get too political politically philosophical here, but it was interesting.
It's just good to know the background of how you met, and that's wonderful. Yeah, it's
yeah.
very good.
And so I kind of, you know, because I would go down to Phoenix to visit my parents all the time and sisters. So we went down there that Christmas, and I said, let's go to the Grand Canyon and we'll do a day hike and
nice.
A couple day hikes. So we did this trip around O'Neill Butte, and then the next day we went down to Plateau Point, right, which is a nice day trip. And the reason I wanted to tell you about this is because we – of course, it's kind of chilly, right, down in Plateau Point in December, and we were sitting down there, and it's a very populated place, right? And so this would have been over the week of Christmas, New Year's, and there were a number of international visitors down there. I remember the language, right, was quite diverse, and we were sitting there just looking, checking out the crowds and the views, and we watched this couple, and the husband has got his camera up, and he's taking, you know, he's trying to frame a picture for his wife, and he's actually telling her, you know, step back a little bit more, step back. And it's like we're watching this happen in real time, like she was going to, you know, one more step back, and it would have been the end, right? And it was very disconcerting because, you know, as this is all happening in a period of seconds, but you're seeing, and Renee and I both were seeing, watching this kind of unfold at the same time, right? And understanding what was happening and the implications.
Yeah.
And just before, you know, I started to scream, watch out, you know, the woman kind of stumbled and caught herself and came forward.
Oh my gosh.
So that she didn't go over the edge of the cliff backwards. And, you know, it was just like, oh my God! And what did we just watch? It's almost like seeing a disaster. Well, it's almost like seeing it unfold, you know, in real time.
Yeah.
And later, Renee said, you know, I wonder if we were seeing an attempted murder there at one point, the way the husband was just suggesting she should, you know, step back for his to get a better picture. In any event, I mean, it was all well at the end, and we actually talked to them briefly. To make sure everything was okay, and we, you know, went back up to the rim, and I'm very happy to say that Renee just bolted up the trail. You know, she's a very like a deer going up that trail without the packs on, but very interesting experience to see something like that happening, particularly, you know, when you've read the book Death in Grand Canyon, and you know that this is a relatively common situation, right?
Yeah,
with people not being aware of their surroundings and, you know, literally stepping off the cliff.
That's right.
So, it's such like a place like Plateau Point. I mean, you do have those railings up in some parts to primarily for the mule parties to tie to, I think. And actually, that's back from the rim a little ways, and you can walk from there out to the point itself, and that's where we were sitting, right on the edge of the Tapiz sandstone. So, yeah, you got to be careful for sure. So,
yeah.
That was kind of an interesting experience for Renee too, to see, on her first day hike in the canyon, or second day hike, to see just what troubles people can get themselves into.
Yeah.
And of course, she then assumes that, you know, I'm going to be constantly in those situations myself. I assured her that, no, we try to be, you know, when we're hiking, we try to be a little bit more aware of our environment, right, and where we are, and really not anything to worry about. So anyways, that was it for hiking in 99. It was a relatively quiet year, but again, a lot of developments on the personal front. And so in the following March, though, in 2000, I was back at it, but again, it was shorter trips, and so Art and I decided we wanted to go down and do some hiking on the Esplanade around the South Bass area, Mount Waitawali.
Okay.
And so we wanted to go and try Tyndall and Wallace too, because by this time, you know, I was starting to get the bug for summits, and I wanted to kind of take as many as I could, particularly the ones that were relatively easy non-roped climbs, or at least what we thought were non-roped climbs. So by looking at the map, you know, we figured with a couple day trip here, we could get some good Esplanade exploring in, and we could also do a few buttes, you know, Tyndall, Wallace, and Fisk. Hmm. And we had done Waitawali together in the mid 70s when we did a South Bass to Boucher backpack trip, the two of us. So that wasn't on the menu this trip. But so we drove out to the South Rim there and got an afternoon start down the trail, and then camped at the, you know, at the head of the where the Bass starts out across the Esplanade and then drops down through the Esplanade sandstone, the upper part of the Supai group, and then cuts back on the long traverse to get into the descent down to the Redwall. So we camped right on the neck there, and you know, beautiful spot to camp, and many people camp there. Obviously, you know, in fact, we had found, was it this trip? I remember, yeah, I think it was this trip, but it may have been the trip with Renee that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. We found a couple of air mattresses stashed out there.
Oh.
And, yeah, right at the top of the Redwall. And I thought at the time, I remember thinking, I wonder if these were related to that couple that we had found the camping gear down below a few years before, you know, on the Tonto. So I don't know what the answer to that was. But
possible.
But, yeah, so anyways, the next morning, the two of us got up, and the objective was to head out to Fisk. And so we started out and walked around the north side of Mount Waitawali, and there's huge mezcal pits there. I remember very distinctly lots of mezcal pits. And then we walked out Spencer Terrace and past the Mystic Spring there, which, again, was dry. And then if you go out to the north end of Spencer Terrace, there's a way to drop down through the upper Supai sandstones there. And you can work your way down through a series of ledges and gullies and, you know, chimneys, basically, at some point. And you can get down to the top of the Redwall. It's pretty straightforward. Nothing really technical in there, just lots of interesting route finding. And we knew about the Montevideo inscription,
right,
which is out at the end of Spencer Terrace. Now, you've heard of that?
I have, but why don't you tell us about it? Just don't tell us where it is.
Oh, don't tell us. Don't tell you where it
is.
Okay.
Don't tell us where it is, but tell us about it.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because on this trip, we had heard about this. We'd read about it in Harvey's notes. So we were interested in seeing it. And so we had our eyes open, and it was kind of spitting snow that day, some wind, and, you know, just clouds scud running by, blowing by, and a few crystals of snow would be hitting your face. And so, you know, we were a little bit focused on hiking and the weather, and we looked for the inscription, but we never could find it. And what it is a beautiful engraved word. It says Montevideo, Montevideo, and picture of mountains in Spanish, I guess, would be a mountain picture in Spanish. And nobody really knows what the inscription is means or who made it. Of course, all of this area, you know, had a lot of tourist visitation back in the early part of the 20th century, when Bill Bass had his camp out there. So presumably it's related to that, and somebody just had a motivated afternoon out there, and they chiseled this name, this word or phrase, into the rock. It's all one word. It's all in capital letters, and it's a beautiful job of engraving. Anyways, we missed it when we went out there on our first pass. And but, you know, we had plenty of things to do. And, of course, back in that time, we always knew we were going to be coming back to all these places many more times in our life. So we I said that facetiously, of course, because, the time just gets ahead of you, right? So anyway, so we headed down the breaks through the Supai, missing the Montevideo. inscription, and then hiked out to Fisk. And Fisk is just it's really nothing. It's just a knob of on the summit, on the top of the Red Wall, and just a grassy slope basically that goes up to it. But of course, it's one of these buttes that from below looks much more impressive. You know, it's just an extension of the end of a cliff of Red Wall, and we were able to walk out there. But there was really nice grass, you know, in this time of year in March. There was nice grass all over the place on top of the Red Wall there. It was really, really kind of interesting to experience that. And so, you know, we prefer to do loops rather than out and back on trips. And sometimes, you have a trip, destination has to be accessed by the same way you return. But this hike, we decided what we'd do was just hike the Red Wall Rim all the way around into Garnet Canyon.
Okay.
After we had climbed Fisk. And so it was a little dicey at the front, at the beginning of that traverse, because it's quite steep in there. As you go around, it would be, I guess, above Waltenburg Rapids. You're going along the Red Wall Rim, and the Supai slope is quite steep, right? So you have to be kind of careful. But after that, it opens up, and it's just smooth going, you know, really, really quick walking. And, you get fantastic views down into the Granite Gorge and Garnet Canyon. And
that's a view. Most people are down on the Tonto following the trail down there. They're not the top of the Red Wall.
That's right. That's right. And, so we just had a fine time walking along there. Wow. And then and we did see water. We could see water down in Garnet.
Huh.
I remember that, a water pocket above where the trail is. And, quite a ways up.
Hmm.
And you just see the sun glinting off it, right?
Uh-huh.
That's how you know what it is. And so it was just a fun afternoon hike. And then we got in, as we came around the Red Wall Rim, we entered the bed of Garnet Canyon above the Red Wall drop. And then we just followed that up, back up to the neck of, the Esplanade there, where we had set up or stashed our gear for our camp. Right.
Ah,
so
okay.
Yeah, a nice day hike and another summit. Right. So, although we missed Montevideo, and the weather, I mentioned the blowing snow at the beginning, but by the afternoon it was nice and sunny, and I remember being pretty heated up, coming up the canyon at the end of the day. But a nice trip overall, nice day hike, I should say. So the next day, so we camped again at that same spot, and the next day was kind of like going to be the big day, right? Because we were going to do two summits, Tyndall and Wallace. And, again, we had read a little bit about this. We knew that both summits had been climbed by Alan Doty in the same day.
Okay.
And, we knew how we could get out there. We knew that you can go down, basically follow the South Bass Trail down to the top of the Red Wall, and then just follow the Red Wall Rim out to get to to get beneath Wallace. And then Tyndall is another one of these buttes that's essentially the end of the Red Wall, and from below it looks much more impressive than it is from above, but it is specifically separated from the rim of the Red Wall adjacent to it. So there's a technical climb to get down to the notch between Tyndall and the ridge, and then of course you have to climb up Tyndall. And so we figured, we just figured that we would have these things in our pocket. It wouldn't be any big deal. It'd be a nice, fun day hike. So we boogie along, on the top of the Red Wall. We're moving really fast, and we get out there to Wallace Butte, and we walk along the east side of Wallace. At the top of the Red Wall, and Wallace Butte is a Supai Butte. We get to the point of the Red Wall, which overlooks Tyndall Dome. And so we, at this point, we know we have to kind of work our way down somehow to the notch between Tyndall and the main part of the Red Wall that we're standing on.
Right.
And so, you look over the edge and you say, well, Doty went down here somewhere, so we just got to find it, And we look over the edge, and it is really steep.
Huh?
And I, you know, we looked for like a half an hour and just trying to get started. You would go down these blocky vertical ledges
Right.
with tremendous exposure,
Right.
and you get to a point, it was like, I just am not going to keep going. This
Right.
is just like too much, you know? And so, you know, we basically said, well, there must be some hidden slot somewhere that we can't find, and we're going to have to bag it, you know, blow it off this time, because we just could not get anywhere. So it's kind of disappointing, and because we thought we had an easy one, right? And
Yeah.
that it, with our route, you know, with our great route finding skills, we shouldn't have any difficulty with it. But we were skunked once again. So yeah. Anyways, we had to kind of retreat on Tyndall that time, and so the thinking was, well, at least we'll get Wallace today, you know. And so we walked back to Wallace. It's not very far from the Tyndall Overlook to get back to Wallace, and we walked along the east face of it, and thinking, well, I don't know about getting up here, you know. And we didn't know the details of the route. We just knew that Doty had climbed it, and our assumption was that these were third class climbs that Doty had done. And so we poked around trying to get up a couple of chimneys and whatnot on Wallace, and I said, well, let's go around the west side. And so we walked around the west side, and there's a beautiful detached flake there that was just not very obvious at all. But if you got, you know, coming from the south, you could see up into the detached
Oh, wow.
Area, right? And it looked like, wow, it looks like maybe you can climb up in there and then get through this ledge of this persistent ledge of supai. And sure enough, we were able to do that. You actually had to tunnel at one point
Huh.
through a little hole,
Uh-huh.
and that got you up on top of this flake and onto the next ledge. So at that point, then we were able to walk along that ledge on the west side out to the north end. So this is at staying at the same level on this ledge, and then come all the way around on the east side of Wallace to a point that was about maybe still 100 feet below the summit. And so I thought, well, you know, we found the secret key, you know, the secret to the route. Of course we're going to get up. So we come around the east side, and we're looking up, and it's like, where did Doty go? And we're looking, and we tried a couple of starts, you know, here and there, and it's pretty vertical. You have to, you know, use your hands and feet, and there's exposure if you come off. And so it was just a little bit more than we were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, we tried several times to get up here and there, and eventually we just said, well, you know, seems like it's above our skills. So we just kind of gave up. And I remember sitting there with Art for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, just resting on a big sandstone ledge, and, you know, chatting about our skills as climbers compared to you know, what Doty must be like, because he did this in the mid 60s without a rope, and he third classed it, and as well as doing Tyndall the same day. So you know, it was very humbling for us to
Al Doty, Doty, I believe.
Yes.
That had the record at the time for the south rim down to Phantom Ranch to the north rim, back down to Phantom Ranch and back up to the south rim for the rim to rim to rim time record. Is that right? Or was it just one way?
No, I think you're right. I think it was rim to rim to rim.
And
round trip.
This is phenomenal time. I mean, the guy was just a fast, wiry guy, and just amazing climber and hiker. And
I'm not sure he ever did any technical rock climbing, you know, with ropes and whatnot. But he did a number of first ascents in the Grand Canyon, and these two, I think, are tremendous testament to his boldness, you know, as a solo first ascender, right, going out on his own and doing these climbs. And again, you know, this is long before GPS and sat phones and spots and things like that to keep you linked to people. So if anything had gone wrong on his climbs, he would have been out there, you know, fully on his own. So it was just a real eye-opening experience, and just raised my opinion of Doty, an order of magnitude. And so anyways, we turned our tail
so you didn't succeed in either summit.
We didn't succeed in either summit.
Why? Okay.
Yeah. And well, this story is not over. I mean, the Wallace story. Both the stories have more to continue on later hikes, right? But so we started back, and I guess the only thing that was a salvage for the day was we found a nice break up through the Supai, you know, so we didn't have to go all the way back into the head of the the red wall there to get up back, you know, to the trail to go up to the top of the Supai. We found a break that would take us up to the Esplanade sooner. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a positive outcome. And don't get me wrong, I mean, we enjoy every day, matter what the outcome. But certainly when you're expecting to grab a couple of quick summits, then and they don't materialize, and you realize just how limited your capabilities are in some situations, it's kind of enlightening, so if we can put it that way. So that was a short trip, and then we did another trip a couple days later. Actually, I think we went back to the South Rim and got a hotel. And actually, my notes here say that the dates are that, you know, we immediately went back to the South Rim and then went on a new hike. It was just down to Paddy and Lyell and Newton in that area, right? Okay. So a couple day hike, an overnight hike, two nights actually. And this trip was pretty interesting because we went down the Kaibab and then walked along the Red Wall Rim and over to the east, and then went up and climbed up to the saddle between Newton Butte and Shoshone Point. That's where we camped. And I'll tell you, along the way, along the Red Wall, between the Kaibab Trail and the head of Cremation Canyon there, there's a number of these huge water pockets right in the lip of the Red Wall. That would hold water probably for quite a bit of the summer, you know. Obviously, there's no reason to go to these water holes unless, you know, you're hiking in the area like we were. But it was just very interesting to see, you know, this huge amount of standing water. And it may explain why we saw several bighorn in this area. And like, they were just letting us walk within like 25 feet of them and just sitting there. I got a picture of one that is just sitting right on the edge of the Red Wall and just watching us, you know, and we walked right above it. And it was pretty impressive. And so we really enjoyed that. And of course, this is the drainage where the figurine caves were identified in the 1960s.
Right, or 50s maybe even.
Maybe even the 50s, yeah, I think you're right on that for sure. And, these split twig figurines, I remember as a kid seeing them, and I thought, well, that's really neat. It would be neat to find something like that in a cave or some sort of a setting. And I've never found any, but, you know, I've often thought it would be interesting to see where the caves are in Cremation Canyon in the Red Wall, and see if they could be accessed, right? And presumably one of these caves would be where they found these figurines. So we were looking pretty seriously for cave options, and not that we were going to go into them if they were of any extent, but Art has done a lot of caving in his life, and I know he knows, well, he knows a lot about caving, and he knows to stay quiet about it. So
yeah.
Yeah, but you know, we chat about it, and And so we were interested in potentially seeing, a cave where these things might have been found. So we're keeping our eye out for that. But we also want to do these ascents. So we camped in the bench there between Newton and Comanche Point. And I remember that this was in March, remember? So at the end of March, there were many ticks there. And you don't, it's kind of unusual to find them. I mean, we found them in the past, no question about that, here and there. You'd find one like on your shirt or something. And quite honestly, I've never actually had a problem where a tick got into my flesh hiking in the canyon. But for some reason, in this particular site, there were ticks just everywhere. And Art found them first on his shirt, and then we started finding them kind of like everywhere. And when I say we found them everywhere, we probably found about 15 total. But it was very unusual, right? And of
That's,
course,
yeah. You guys
once you
walked right
see,
through a bloom of them,
yeah, I guess
and
that's what it
they all
was.
just grabbed onto you, and there they were.
Yeah. So,
And the sheep were
but.
there too, so there's, because they'll typically be where the sheep are going, so.
Very, very, very good point. I hadn't actually appreciated that. That's very, very reasonable linkage there. So, well, anyways, we camped there, and the next day we hiked out to Paddy Butte. And
Okay.
Paddy Butte, I think, had been ascended first by Butchart. I mean, he may have been with a group, first recorded ascent.
Okay.
And so Paddy Butte's another one of these Supai Buttes that sits up on top of the Red Wall, and a very thrilling chimney climb up the thing. I have to say, it was very, very exciting, and I was really impressed with Butchart's resolve to tackle that and get to the top. But this one we were successful on, so that was positive.
Cool.
And then on the way back to our camp, we decided to we could see that there was a break in the Red Wall. Of course, there's a lot of breaks on in the Red Wall in this particular area
Right.
over to Cottonwood Creek, basically. But we saw this obvious break, so we went down that down to the bed of cremation, and then hiked up the bed to another Red Wall break, which was farther up the canyon and just below our camp. So, we just add another loop to the whole effort, and basically made it back to the same spot where we camped again. Then the next morning we wanted to do Lyell, so we left our gear and then dropped down into Grapevine. So the west arm of Grapevine goes straight all the way down to the Red Wall. It's just a long slide, basically. Very, very simple to get down there. And then we hiked along the Red Wall Rim up to Lyell Butte, and I remember there was a very interesting route finding on Lyell to get through the Supai ledges. But we worked that one out, and again, it wasn't very challenging, not even particularly difficult, but another butte on the list, right? So that was very satisfying. And from there, then we decided to hike a different way back, and so we hiked the Red Wall to the north, and it would be following along the Red Wall Rim above Boulder Creek and then into the Lone Tree Creek drainage.
Well, okay.
Yeah, and about this time, Art had started the idea of walking a lot of these Red Wall Rim segments, and he's done a fair amount of the Red Wall Rim on the South Rim.
Nice.
And there's some places he hasn't gone to yet, like the area out around what is it there, the Abyss, which is between Mojave Point and Pima Point, so on the West Rim Drive there. There's a that's a very looks like it looks from a distance like it's a very, very steep slope there from the top of the Red Wall up the Supai, and so we th it's not guaranteed that one can get through there,
Right.
but I know he's done a lot of the Red Wall Rim, and so this is another interval that he could add to his map there, and And it's always just lots of great fun, you know. So, again, there were deep water pockets in that region, right at the rim of the Red Wall.
Nice.
And so we, that was basically the half a day to get back, you know, to our campsite, or 2/3 of the day, and then we finished the trip by going up the Shoshone Point route. And I think that was the first time Art had been up that.
Oh, that's a wonderful route. Yeah.
You know, and you've probably done that yourself.
It's a wonderful route. It's
yeah,
really
spectacular.
Great.
You know, just spectacular. And I remember when Chuck Graff found that route in the 1970s, and he told us about it in when I say he found it, I mean it was obvious. You know, there's obviously the evidence there of First Nations transiting through there. But
yeah,
you know, he was the one that brought it to light to the modern explorers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him telling us about it when we lived in Phoenix when we were kids, and always wanting to do that climb. And I had done it about, I don't know, 10 years earlier, I guess, when I started to get back into canyon hiking.
Hmm.
And not 10 years, maybe 5 years earlier. We talked about that earlier,
yeah.
I think. And so Art got a chance to do it too. And it's such a spectacular,
yeah,
spectacular climb. So, and so then we just hiked from there back to Yaki Point, where our car was parked, and finished that trip. So, you know, a couple of easy, light trips, objectives that are clearly defined, but you know, we weren't successful on some of them, and we were successful on others. And I guess that, you know, at this point in time, I was starting to appreciate that these summits weren't guaranteed things. You know,
right.
That
right.
Sure. I mean, I had tried Vishnu a couple of times, but you know, my friends had broken their arms, or you know, other things happened. But here was a couple of attempts where we actually, you know, made it right to the butte, and our skills failed us, you know, and on fairly what are considered fairly simple climbs. So it was a very interesting experience, and you know, keep that in mind as I continue to try and tick these climbs off. So more on Wallace and Tyndall later, but
okay.
Then we this was in late March that Art and I had taken these two trips, and then my recollection is that Renee came down to visit my family in Phoenix, and we decided to do she and I to do a short trip ourselves, and this was going to be out along the Palisades of the desert, right along the east rim of the canyon. So the Palisades of the desert is the big cliff that runs from Desert View up to the mouth of the Little Colorado River. So it's about, what is it, 15 miles there, 12 miles,
yeah,
where
like
you
that.
Just have this tremendous
Maybe
drop
yeah.
from the rim down to below the Red Wall. And in many places, that cliff through the Kaibab, Toroweep, Coconino, and Supai and Red Wall is essentially one, you know, more or less continuous
Marvelous.
Drop. And
yeah,
it's quite spectacular. And so I suggested to Renee, look, we could just hike along the rim and get spectacular views, and it should be really enjoyable. So, you know, she was game for that, and we got a vehicle that Renee's cousin had a Ford Ranger, I think, with four-wheel drive.
Okay.
So we could get down the road there east of Desert View and get down towards Cedar Mountain where we dropped the car. And so that saved a lot of hiking.
Right.
And we camped out there.
But that road, that once you get down on the, you go off the monocline and level out again, and then the road that went north is closed off.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah. And it was, I mean, I remember walking that, and there are places in there where it would be very, very challenging to get a four-wheel drive through there now.
Right.
So it's really been, you know, it's been weathered, let's
Washed
put it
out.
That way,
yeah.
In addition to
yeah.
being closed off.
That's
so.
Right.
It
crosses a fairly substantial drainage, and that got all blown out. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we, you know, we we had planned to just park there where we left our vehicle and do this as a hike. So it's not like we were planning to, you know, to drive out to Cape Solitude or anything. But the objective was to hike the rim basically from Comanche Point out to Cape Solitude. So, so we left the car in the morning, and I remember it was kind of chilly and cold and blowing. And, so we started down Straight Canyon and then follow the road. It comes up out of Straight Canyon. And then we decided to go up towards Comanche Point. So, I'd never been to Comanche Point, and it's one of the more spectacular prominences in the canyon, you know, particularly with that little thumb of a pinnacle that sticks up below the actual point.
Yes.
And so we did. We hiked up there. We dropped our packs down below because you don't have to, you know, carry your packs up. You're going to come back the same way. And we get to the summit, and I was, you know, hoping my new wife of a year, you know, would have this glorious view of the entire Eastern Canyon and with the Colorado River below. And but we get to the point itself, and there's just horrendous winds coming up out of the canyon, and it's just blowing snow. I mean, it wasn't a whiteout by any means, but it was pretty dramatic. And, you know, it's just the kind of thing you couldn't even stand there for very long, not that there was anything to look at, but the winds were buffeting you so much that it was really uncomfortable. So we backed off. We didn't get the view, and we backed off, went back down to our packs, and then just started walking the rim to the north. And it's fairly straightforward. Some ups and downs, because there's drops in the rim where drainage is cut back from the east, and so you have to drop down and then go back up. But as you go farther and farther north, those drops diminish, and so that it's more or less flat walking when you're getting closer to Cape Solitude.
Right.
But we were running out of time, and so we camped short of the Cape by about.
You're trimming your own water because there's no water out there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, we had our own water on this trip. The whole way. And, our objective was to get to Cape Solitude and camp there, or at least close to it so that we could go out in the morning.
Hmm.
And then we'd walk the road back. So there's a Jeep, the old Jeep trail, right, which goes out to the Cape. But anyways, we were getting kind of late in the afternoon here, and it was in March, so it wasn't, wasn't particularly long days. And we encountered a couple of bighorn, which was pretty dramatic, but the winds just were unceasing. And we got to a point finally, and it was getting to be late. And I just said, okay, we've got to stop here. We're not going to make it to the Cape and got to find shelter. And I had a tent. So that was nice because we were able to put up a tent and crawl inside. But all night long, we had these tremendous winds buffeting the tent, and neither of us slept.
Wow.
And it was pretty disappointing for Renee because, you know, she hadn't been to the Grand Canyon very much, and this trip was not turning out to be the best, right, with the heavy winds and the blowing snow and the lack of views. And, it was a little disconcerting and frustrating. And so we spent the night out there and hardly slept. And then in the morning, I just said, look, we're so tired. Let's just, get back to the car as soon as we can. So instead of going to the Cape, we just walked down the slope to the east to the Jeep trail and then followed that back. And so it was, by that time it was sunny.
Did you walk that trail, that Jeep road, all the way back to your vehicle, or did you leave that and stay along the rim?
No, we hiked that because we'd gone out along the rim.
Right.
So we hiked back along the Jeep trail. Now, there was at one point when we got into the Straight Canyon drainage, so very close to the vehicle, a mile or two away.
Right.
The Jeep trail stays high.
That's right.
But we went downstream a little ways and then came up a tributary to the canyon and got to our vehicle sooner,
yeah.
So, I mean, the upshot was I mean, it was still beautiful walking along that,
Yeah.
you
It
know, the plateau.
just kind of that road heads quite a ways east and then comes back again, and you know, so you just add a little more mileage, but it is beautiful country, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and it, you know, it adds more mileage, but it's relatively going constant grades,
Yes,
right?
that's right.
So whereas when you're on the rim, you're constantly doing this up and down,
Right.
and so it was better to go back that way for sure. And at the end of the day, I remember we got back to our car and we were feeling at least relaxed and happy to be back. And we started looking around in the dirt at our feet, and we start finding all these shards. It was
Oh,
just unbelievable, you know. And a very, very prolific place for pot shards. And
wow. Nice.
so it was you know, it was a good ending to an unfortunate hike. But and I'm not sure Renee's been back to
Oh.
the canyon. So it was a little frustrating for her. So yeah. So that kind of took us up till through what, spring of 2000, and I don't think I did another trip until the next spring. I would, you know, we Art and I didn't always get a fall trip in, and but the next one again, we were trying. You know, we decided we're going to make another attempt to do Powell Plateau at the Esplanade level. So this would have been in May of 2001.
All right.
And Art was following the weather, and he thought there'd been enough precipitation up in northern Arizona that we could do you know, have a reasonable good a chance to get around Powell and find sufficient water. So so I flew down, and he picked me up at the airport as we always did, and probably went to REI and got some last minute items, and then headed north. And this time we went out to Swamp Point, and I remember we were very concerned about, you know, access out to the point because it's in May. So the park, I don't believe, well, it had probably just opened up,
Right.
and so we didn't know what the roads were going to be like. You know, quite often there'd be dead trees or downed trees that had blown down or
That's
fallen
right.
down during the
You have to
winter.
cut your way in.
Yeah, so Art had, of course, he has all sorts of saws
Okay.
and all sorts of supplies to deal with that, you know, if we have to. And we were able to drive more or less all the way into Swamp Point. We
Wow.
stayed like a little bit, like a half a kilometer short of the point in the Ponderosa Pine Forest because we wanted to camp on the rim.
Nice.
And so it was no problem getting in there. And then, of course, in the morning we hiked down to the saddle. And the Moab saddle, and then up onto the plateau. And our objective was to go up onto Powell Plateau, and then find a route down that Art had heard about. I forget who he'd heard this from. Might have been Alan Doty. That's pretty much due west of Moab saddle, so it's pretty far north on Powell Plateau on the west side.
Okay.
So our objective was to drop down off the north end of Powell Plateau onto the west side of Powell at the Esplanade level. And
Right.
then we would follow the Esplanade all around to
Follow
the
it back.
south, past Ives Point, Wheeler Point, and around to Dutton Point, as we'd done as we'd been where we'd been a few years before, right? We started out to this point, to this route, and again, we didn't have the full beta on this, and so we just knew that there was a route, or we thought there was a route, and we went out to this point, and we started poking around and spent a lot of time looking for this route and couldn't find it. Now, this would be getting down
Huh.
to get down through the Coconino, right?
Yeah.
We were able to get down through the Kaibab just fine, but actually getting through the Coconino was where we ran into the challenges. So eventually we just had to give up and head back up, which was kind of frustrating because we, you know, we had left Swamp Point, left our car with 2 gallons of water each, and this was a kind of a day, much of a day spent not getting anywhere. And using up that water. So we were a little frustrated,
Yeah, I
but
bet.
we, you know, we went back if you can't find the route, you can't find the route. There's no two ways around it. So we camped up on the rim, and I remember there were a lot of bugs at that camp to add to the frustration, right? A lot of bugs and gnats in the early part of the evening. They always seem to go away when the night cools down sufficiently. So
when the bats come out, they've got to hold up. They're going to be bat food.
Yeah, right. That's right. So the next morning we got back up. We woke up and then headed south. We knew that there were more routes down to the Esplanade. We just had to walk farther south to get to them, right?
Yes.
So the route we found is it's up in, let's see, how do I describe it? Anyways, it's at in one of the upper arms of Bedrock.
Okay.
So probably about 2 miles south of the one we had tried to work our way down the previous day. But so we got down there by walking the trail along the east side of Powell, along the rim, for a couple of miles, and then headed through the brush. And again, you know, I think I told you last week that we spoke, when we were up on Powell, we found these big ruins, and we found more of these again, you know, just multi-rooms with low walls. I guess I didn't know, I mean, I knew that there were these ruins up there, and you see these, the Park Service has some of these ruins marked as visitor spots on the South Rim, you know, fairly substantial complexes. But I hadn't actually known that they were up on Powell, right? And to see them up there was kind of interesting. It's like, well, you know, a lot of people were living up here, and it's pretty dry now. I wonder what, you know, where they went for water, or if there was actually water flowing, you know, quite more commonly on the surface then.
Right.
And presumably it would have been, you know, more accessible than it is today. And so it was just, you know, evidence of previous occupation and a different climate than we have today. So it was kind of interesting to see that. Anyways, we were able to find this break this time, no problem, and worked our way down the Esplanade. And we were really fortunate here to find lots of seeps. And so we were really, you know, excited because here was our water. We knew there were seeps in the at the Esplanade level, and, you know, we needed to have these seeps in order to be successful at getting around Powell, right, on this trip.
Right,
so
right.
To find them right at the beginning of the hike was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were able to fill up there and then continue the hike south. So we did that, and I think it was, you know, we camped along the Esplanade there at one point. It was actually by the time we got down into Bedrock there, when we got down to the Esplanade, we found the water, that's where we camped. So we didn't go too far along the Esplanade to the southwest that day.
Okay.
So we put the camp up and then figured we had a pretty good shot, you know, continuing around and being successful this time.
Yeah, yeah.
But as we went south and west, you know, the plateau drops, it dips, the strata dip to the southwest. So you're dropping in elevation. And the vegetation becomes sparser, and it becomes drier. And all these seeps that we had run into at the beginning of the hike when we first got down to the Esplanade, they seem to be disappearing. And the last one we saw was at Newberry Point. And so that was about, you know, a few miles around from where we camped. We made a few miles progress. And that was the last seep. And so we continued on because we didn't know it was the last seep, but they were definitely sparser. So we worked our way around Thompson Point into the bed of 128 Mile.
Okay.
And this is where, you know, we decided that we pretty much had to bag it because we could not find any water whatsoever. And we spent a lot of time looking there in 128 Mile, trying to find some sort of a pothole or a seep, something, right? And no water to be found. And we still had plenty of water, but, you know, we needed to top up to make sure that we were going to have enough to get us around to Dutton Point, right? And a couple of days walking. So So again, you know, we made the decision, well, we're going to have to turn around and short of our objective and backtrack. And it's again frustrating, right? Because this is essentially the second big time attempt to go around Powell.
I must say I don't have too much sympathy for you, because the views were just incredible. So it's a great place to go out and walk out and walk back and go, well, we didn't do that thing, but my gosh, it must have been just beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to be able to take our time on this and have plenty of water was because we wanted to go out all these terraces, right? It was the objective of going around Powell Plateau, but it's just that hike itself provides you access to so many other side hikes, right?
Yeah.
Going out on these terraces, and you walk out the terrace and you get a tremendous view down onto the river below, you know, and very remote. I'm saying it like it's a big disappointment, but of course there's always a benefit.
That's right. That's right.
And you know, we actually said, okay, we actually figured, well, we'll do something different here.
Hmm.
We'll go to the north because we were having plenty of water success to the north.
Ah.
Let's on the Esplanade. Let's focus our efforts there. So we backtracked from 128 and along the Esplanade back to where we had come down from the top of Powell, and then we kept going along the Esplanade to the north. And you remember last week we talked about Firoz Terrace. And I told you I had just come across this.
How do you spell that?
Feroz. I had just come across this in some internet searching I was doing, and I had never heard of this. This was just a couple of weeks ago. I found this name, and it's the big terrace that's between Galloway and Bedrock.
Okay.
So up on top on the Esplanade,
yeah.
It's called Firoz Terrace,
okay.
And it's not plotted on the maps. As far as I know, I haven't looked at the most recent 1 to 24,000 maps, but it's certainly not plotted on the bigger scale maps. And anyways, we didn't know it was Firoz Terrace at the time, obviously, but we decided to go out and we walked all around that. And
nice.
Again, talk about your views. I mean, this was just spectacular, because you get out onto these points and they're quite literally just these, you know, finger-like points of at the top of the red wall that project down, looking at the one on the north looks down onto Dubendorf, and the one on the south looks down onto Bedrock.
Nice.
And you just have tremendous views down onto the river, and of course looking downstream, and you can see down to Peach Creek and Deer Creek, and just fantastic views. You know, you really feel like you're out there.
I bet.
When you're out on these points. So it was really really a spectacular place. And I remember we found cowbells out there too, you know, like ranchers would put on their cows.
Huh.
And so that was testament to when the cows used to graze out there.
Yeah.
And you know, probably there were cowboys out there herding them too, right?
Well, so, and they would have come in off the Thunder River Trail
and
gone, you know, down that way and then further east and headed over there. So it's
certainly not out of the question, but
right.
just unusual to see it there now,
because
it's certainly no cows there now.
No.
So, in fact, you know, I have to say that's one of the things that's very interesting about the Grand Canyon is, like, I've seen very little large wildlife over the years. You know, for all the hundreds of days I've been hiking in there, probably the most abundant large mammals I've seen are bighorn, more than deer, I think. I got to back off on that. Deer are fairly calm, especially on the plateau, and then we've seen the Roosevelt elk, you know, in fairly large numbers.
Okay.
I've seen a cat once, a cougar, mountain lion, I guess, and but nonetheless, you would think that there'd be more, you know, and but that's the way it is, you know, and that's just the natural biota there. So Firoz Terrace, I hardly recommend that if you get the chance to go into this part of the Esplanade. And so from there, you know, we were finding water pretty commonly now in water pockets or in seeps.
Okay.
And so we knew we didn't have any problems, and we continued north walking on along the Esplanade, heading for Steamboat. You know, we'd been up Steamboat a couple of years prior from as a day hike off of Powell Plateau.
Right.
But this time we decided we wanted to hike all around the terrace to Peach Terrace out to the west of Steamboat. And I know you've been out there from the river at one point. But we basically camped at the neck of the Supai there.
Okay.
between Galloway and Saddle Canyon, the
okay.
neck of Supai between Powell and Steamboat, I guess. And then the next day started our day hike by hiking out Arrowhead Terrace, another one that is gets you way out, you know, into overlooking Galloway. And then we backtracked and again followed the Redwall Rim around to Peach Terrace, out to the west end of that. So by the time you get out there, you're pretty low elevation. There's very little in the way of vegetation, pinyon juniper, occasional junipers here and there, right?
Yeah.
And I remember getting, you know, just standing out there and getting tremendous views down onto Thunder River and to Peach Creek below, and wondering if anybody could get up there, you know, from the down below. And
right.
of course, now I know from you talking to you that you've been up there.
From
what I understand, a pretty scary route. I think maybe it was Art that told me that you had done that, but. Anyways, quite impressive achievement, I think, because it looks very steep through that whole area.
Well, from the top, it always looks terrible, but coming up from the bottom, it's not that bad. So,
no,
you know, there's some chimneying, there's a lot of route finding. It's a challenging route to put all the pieces together, but when you do, it's not that bad. But
But
coming in, you know, getting to that terrace from the river or from the rim, it's a little work.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you know, you could get out there now that I know the route to go. I mean, I could do it in a day, right, to get out to the tip of Tapete's Terrace.
Mm.
But, you know, it's still a grunt, and it's hard work. When I say a day, I'm not, you know, we're not talking about, an easy day's hiking here. We're talking about scrambling, you know, down through lots of cliffs and up through cliffs and route finding and so it's a challenge, but you can get there still you get the summit in spite of the fact that it's only a day from Swamp Point, and I kind of say that loosely because when you're at Swamp Point, you're in a very remote place to start with.
That's right.
But then a full day's walk from there through the canyon is very remote, but it is truly spectacular to be up in places like that, you know, where you're just so far out, and you know you're in a very extended place. You know, you're getting views into the canyon that very few people ever get, you know, and they're just tremendous and spectacular in the country that they cover. So we had a great time out there, and again, you know, we had our disappointment going south, but big deal, you know, we got to spend all this time on Tapete Terrace and Arrowhead Terrace and Firaz Terrace. So we continued our hike. We were basically walking around the terrace from the south side and then up the west side and then along the north side. We were kind of making a big loop around Steamboat Mountain, right at the edge of the Redwall. And I remember it was getting pretty warm we were about halfway along the traverse along the north side of Steamboat, and we struggled up under a cliff and found some shade in there to get out of the sun, and it was a little tiny seep, and I remember collecting like a cup of water in 15 minutes, and enjoying that, you know, and then continuing around and finishing the hike around the east side of Steamboat back to our camp. So, you know, that turned into a pretty spectacular day.
Yeah.
And to finish the trip, the next day we got up, and rather than going and reversing our route or going up onto Powell Plateau at the way that Art and I had come down a few years prior when we went out to Steamboat, we decided to go to the southeast and then drop down into Saddle Canyon. and then follow Saddle Canyon up and just for a different route, you know. And we had been down Saddle Canyon a few years before when we'd done our Circumpowell trip at the river level.
Right.
And we had ended our trip, that long trip, by going down Saddle Canyon. So we knew if we could get down to the bed of the canyon that we could work our way back up to Moab Saddle without any difficulty. So we, it was not like it was any big challenge, but just lots of route finding and scrambling, and eventually we made our way down and connected with another route to put on the map. So really spectacular
I'm kind
trip.
Of laughing because the brush in there can be really tough.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I basically kind of write that off. I don't really talk about it, but it is really, particularly in there, because that whole area on the north end of Powell, because it's protected, you know, from the, you don't get a lot of direct sun, and there's enough precipitation in the winter that it supports a fairly substantial vegetation.
Right.
And there are places, you know, where you're just ripping your skin, you know, going through the brush. And I remember sliding down supine boulder slopes, you know, through thickets of oak and just really miserable hiking. And but you know, at the end of the trip, you don't really think about that stuff
That's right.
anymore.
That's right.
You just think about all the great views.
The views, yeah. It was really, really pretty, but I forget all the brush and
yeah. So you know, ultimately the trip was hugely successful. You know, we didn't get any summits, but this wasn't a summit objective trip, right? And we learned more about the Esplanade, right? So, we knew that we had to be even more serious about the water if we were going to make this circumnavigation. So, you know, we knew we'd be back, and, eventually we did get successful on the Esplanade. We'll hit that at some point.
Okay.
But a great end to another great trip.
Nice.
And
so this is March 2001. Maybe this is a good time to put a comma in this oral history series. What do you think?
Sure, that sounds great. That's good opportunity.
Okay. Well, with that, this will conclude part 15 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday. It's June 6th, 2021. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Tom. Again, I really appreciate the opportunity here. It's a lot of fun to relive these memories.
Oh, I'm really glad you're doing it. All right, thanks, Jim. Hang on.